Good morning, this is AM, I'm Kim Landers. The Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull is vowing to take workplace issues to the next election if Parliament doesn't pass new laws recommended by the Trade Union Royal Commission. The inquiry has made 79 recommendations, including setting up an independent body to regulate both unions and employer groups. It's also recommended that more than 40 individuals and organisations be investigated for possible breaches of criminal and civil law. The ACTU insists the inquiry was a political witch hunt and it's urging the government not to rush in new laws. Samantha Donovan reports.
The Prime Minister says the union movement will emerge stronger if the recommendations of the Hayden Royal Commission are adopted.
Most union officials across Australia, and there are thousands of them, are diligently seeking to represent their members. But nonetheless, this is not a case of a few rotten apples. There are many union officials and widespread cultures of impropriety and malpractice as set out in the report.
Malcolm Turnbull says the Royal Commission findings show the government's Registered Organisations Bill, which has been rejected by the Senate, didn't go far enough, and a new bill will be drafted to include the Commission's recommendations. And he says the Australian Building and Construction Commission Bill, rejected by the Senate in August, will be reintroduced in the first sittings of 2016. The Employment Minister, Michaelia Cash, wants it passed by both houses by the end of March.
The case for the re-establishment of the Australian Building and Construction Commission is now undeniable. The only people who will continue to deny, who will continue to distract, are those who are prepared to put the interests of those rogue unions first.
Prime Minister Turnbull says if the reforms don't get through Parliament, he'll put them to voters at next year's election.
And we will be going to the members of the unions and we'll be saying to them, we want you to get a fair deal. We want you to know what deals your union bosses are doing with your employer. And they'll say to Mr. Shorten, are you on our side? Or are you on the side of the union bosses?
The Secretary of the ACTU, Dave Oliver, maintains the Royal Commission was politically motivated. He rejects the suggestion that corruption is widespread in the union movement, but he says the ACTU is prepared to discuss improving union governance with the government.
I'm calling on Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull to allow some time and space for these discussions to occur and not try and rush through any kind of legislation in the first part of next year.
Labor's spokesman on employment and workplace relations, Brendan O'Connor, also maintains the Royal Commission was a politically motivated witch hunt. He wants the government to consider Labor's recently announced proposals for improving union and employer group governance. They include a recommendation that ASIC investigate serious breaches of the law. Mr. O'Connor says Labor doesn't support the Royal Commission's recommendation an independent regulator be established.
For a government that likes to talk about cutting red tape, here it is again wanting to establish another bureaucracy. How could it be better than proposing ASIC, a mature, a professional, an effective regulator?
The Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry supports the federal government's push for new laws. Its CEO is Kate Carnell.
Look, the ABC legislation must be passed. I can't believe that the crossbenchers won't pass it this time. I think it's really past playing politics here. This commission's report shows that there are some significant problems in Australia in the union movement and in some of the businesses' dealings with the union movement.
The CEO of the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, Kate Carnell, ending Samantha Donovan's report. Nearly a week after a bushfire destroyed 116 homes on Victoria's Surf Coast, the blaze is still causing havoc. Hot, windy conditions forecast for today have fire authorities so worried they've asked residents of several communities to evacuate this morning. Our reporter Simon Lauder is speaking with Stephanie Russell, who runs a guest house in the town of Wongara.
Just about packed. Got a few things left to pack into the car and then head off into Apollo Bay.
What's left to go?
Left to go, the food, the cat's things, and that's about it.
Is it going to be a stressful day for you?
Very, very stressful. To walk out and wonder if the house is going to be there when you come home is pretty nerve-wracking.
Have you got a plan to try and take your mind off it?
Oh, I'll probably walk on the beach in Apollo Bay. But the eerie thing, Simon, is that there is no indication that it is going to be an horrific day. The sun's just coming up, the sea is sparkling, the sky is clear, you can't see any smoke, there's no smell of smoke, it just looks like a normal day. And yet we know that in the hills just behind us, there's that terrible fire burning.
How did you find out about the evacuation recommendation?
Well, the police door knocked, but I had already heard over the grapevine that was going to happen.
Can you tell me about that conversation when they knocked on your door?
They just asked if I was prepared to go, and I said yes, I was. Then they just take down your details.
And they gave you some tape to put on your letterbox. What's the idea there?
The idea there is that this morning they intend to come back and check that everybody has gone. And if you've got the tape on your letterbox or on your gate, then they know that you've actually left the premises, so they don't have to come and knock on the door. So it would just save them a lot of time this morning.
Normally this is the kind of scenario we see in January or February.
Yes, exactly. So this could go on. I mean, we might be facing this half a dozen times before we get the all clear.
And how do you feel about the evacuation?
I think they've been absolutely wonderful. The fact that all those people lost their homes in Wye River and their holiday houses, but nobody lost their lives. It's just amazing because the evacuation was just so orderly. People just did as they were asked, got in their cars and just drove in an orderly fashion into Apollo Bay.
What about the impact of all of this on local businesses?
Oh, it's huge, absolutely huge. I've only had two cancellations and one postponement, but there are many people who have lost all their business for the entire summer season, and of course that's when you make your money. I would just like the fire season to be over.
Woongarra resident Stephanie Russell speaking to Simon Lauder. This is AM Around Australia, where it's 17 and a half minutes past 7. You can also follow us on Twitter. Just search for the hashtag ABCAM. Actor Bill Cosby has appeared in court after being charged with indecent assault, the first criminal case against the veteran US entertainer, despite a string of allegations against him. The 78-year-old has been released on bail. Around 50 women have now come forward with sexual assault claims against him, as North America correspondent Zoe Daniel reports.
Andrea Constand met Bill Cosby via a university basketball program. She described him as a mentor and a friend who then made sexual advances towards her, which she rejected. It was after an incident at his Pennsylvania home in 2004 that she made a complaint against him, but it was settled as a civil case. Now it's resulted in the first criminal charge against the actor. In a written statement, Andrea Constand's lawyers have welcomed the development.
We wish to express our appreciation to the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office, the County Detectives and the Cheltenham Police Department for the consideration and courtesy they have shown Andrea during this difficult time. We have the utmost confidence in Mr. Steele, Ms. Feeden and their team who have impressed us with their professionalism.
Dozens of women have made complaints against Bill Cosby. And in a lengthy deposition given in 2006 but released earlier this year, the actor admitted giving women drugs called Quaaludes and alcohol, but said it was always with consent. On the night in question, he admitted giving Andrea Constand Benadryl tablets, but claimed their relationship was consensual. District Attorney for Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, Kevin Steele, says the actor's admissions in that statement mean many of the facts of what happened are not in question.
When you look at the case, there is a number of aspects that are undisputed in the case. And that has led to the charges that are being brought forth today here. There's not a question in terms of, pills being provided to her. There's not a question as to the occurrence of what went on.
A statute of limitations on the alleged first-degree felony of aggravated indecent assault would have expired next month. Bill Cosby briefly appeared in court today. He then attended the local police station. Bail was set at $1 million. It remains unclear what the implications are for other women who've made similar complaints. In the United States, this is Zoe Daniel reporting for AM.
From tomorrow, the US state of California will ban the sale and import of kangaroo products, despite controversial efforts by the Australian government to have the restriction permanently lifted. A state government authority in California is investigating whether or not the Australian government broke local laws while lobbying for the ban to be overturned. North America correspondent Stephanie March reports.
It was made illegal to import kangaroo products into California in 1971, but in 2007 a moratorium was placed on that ban. The Kangaroo Industry Association of Australia's John Kelly says since then the industry has flourished.
Well, at the retail level in California, there's about $200 million a year. So, you know, it's a fairly substantial trade of product.
But on January 1, 2016, that moratorium will end. Gloves, shoes, meat, pet food made from kangaroo parts will be pulled from California's shelves, which US Humane Society lobbyist Jennifer Fearing says is a good thing.
These animals deserve protection. These iconic species in Australia really should not be killed in such staggering numbers for something as frivolous as, you know, shoes and pet food.
Last September, a California assemblyman, Mike Gibson, who says he was approached by representatives of the Australian government, used what's called a gut and amend tactic to replace a gambling bill that had reached the Senate floor with one repealing the kangaroo product ban. The legislation failed to pass, and Australia's efforts to change the Californian law have been criticised. The Australian government paid $143,000 to the Kangaroo Industry Association of Australia to pay a Californian lobbying firm to work on getting the ban lifted. A complaint made to the state's Fair Political Practices Commission says the move appears to have been an attempt to obscure a foreign government's lobbying activities. It says the Kangaroo Industry Association is a registered lobbyist, while the Australian government doesn't appear to be. The commission is investigating the complaint. Jennifer Fearing again.
All of those were secret, semi, you know, illegitimate, you know, inappropriate ways that were meant to prevent a full public conversation.
John Kelly says the campaign was conducted in the open with the full knowledge of Californian politicians.
It was done in consultation with them, and the Australian government simply supported the industry and our activities.
In a statement, a spokesman for the Australian Department of Agriculture and Water Resources said the government has responded to the commission and is working to clarify the allegation of misreporting and establish the most appropriate way forward. The kangaroo lobby says it will renew its efforts to get the California ban permanently lifted in the new year. Humane Society lobbyist Jennifer Fearing says animal and environmental groups will fiercely contest any changes.
The California legislature and the California voters are incredibly supportive of animal protection laws. I just think they're barking up the wrong tree. I don't think Californians have any interest in buying, you know, kangaroo products.
Humane Society lobbyist Jennifer Fearing ending Stephanie March's report. Australian researchers have identified a protein which can cause breast cancer to worsen or spread to the lungs. The protein drives milk production in pregnancy, but a new study has shown it can also cause the spread of breast cancer. The researchers hope this discovery will lead to more effective treatments. Dr. David Gallego-Ortega from the Garvan Institute of Medical Research is the lead author of the study, and he's speaking here with Sarah Sedgi.
So we have identified a protein, which is called L5, that goes rogue in breast cancer. Now, L5 produces inflammation and then tricks the immune system, which are the inflammatory cells, into helping them to helping the cancer cells to metastasize, which is the spread throughout the body. And this is, metastasis is the actual biggest killer in breast cancer.
So if someone has breast cancer, the protein can make the cancer more severe or cause it to spread to the lungs?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so in our model, we studied the spread to the lungs in particular, but that can be applied to any of the other organs where the breast cancer spreads normally. So L5 is actually a biomarker that predicts for early relapse, which is when the patient worsens very quickly.
How exactly does it drive the spread of the cancer?
Well, so it produces inflammation. And the inflammation produces also damages the blood vessels within the tumor. And that creates an open gate for the cancer cells to get into the blood system. And then from there, see it in some other organ and then produce the advanced breast cancer or the metastasis.
And you've also found that some therapies for breast cancer are affected by this protein as well.
Yeah, so I think that with our discovery, what we found is that now we have opened a whole new angle for therapy. Because we can now target those patients that have that present higher levels of L5 and use anti-inflammatory drugs to reduce the inflammation, which is the helping the cancer cells to spread.
Is there any sense of how many women with breast cancer could be affected by this protein going rogue?
Well, we have done a study retrospective study, and the luminal subtype, which is where L5 is in particular important in this study creating the inflammation, is the most common type of breast cancer and accounts for about 2/3 of all breast cancer patients. So potentially these new therapies for using anti-inflammatory drugs for breast cancer patients can be applied to many, many patients.
Dr. David Gallego-Ortega from the Garvan Institute of Medical Research speaking to our reporter Sarah Sedgi. The federal government is closing a loophole that has allowed former Commonwealth bureaucrats to cash in on the pension. The change comes into effect tomorrow and targets tens of thousands of people. But one financial advisor is worried it'll strip former police officers and teachers of their pensions without adequate warning. Penny Timms reports.
48,000 people are expected to be affected by changes to the defined benefit pension.
I retired when I was 60. So we lived on that until I was 65, and then we were able to apply for the pension.
Graham Miller was a TAFE teacher in New South Wales from 1981 to 2008. He's also a defined benefit pensioner who received part of the Centrelink age pension, as well as an income from his super. And he says he made a lot of personal contributions to that super over the years. Max Lewis is a financial advisor.
You have people now who are on defined benefit pensions, and they include widows of ex-public servants, ex-policemen, ex-teachers, people in the Commonwealth Public Service as well, where the non-assessable component for Centrelink purposes could have been 30% or 40% and some even to 50%. That's what the government introduced years ago.
As he alludes to, for people on a defined pension, Centrelink would overlook a percentage of their income from super, usually anywhere between 20 to 50%. Their income, excluding that percentage, is then what the pension would be based on. But under the changes, only 10% of that income will be overlooked. Mr. Miller estimates his pension will be cut by $140 a fortnight.
Well, $140 a fortnight's a fair bit of money, you know, to lose. As it is now, we get roughly half the old age pension. We lose half of it because of our super. Because, you know, for us, I mean, we own our home. We own everything that's in it in our car, but we haven't got much other than that.
Max Lewis says that will be a big change for some people.
This is an adjustment to a standard of living, which is not over the top, which is really very modest.
The amendment is expected to save the government more than $645 million, and the change has the backing of the Australian Council of Social Services and the National Welfare Rights Network. Mr. Lewis isn't against the change either, rather the way it's being introduced. Unlike other pension changes, this one is happening with little warning, and there is no adjustment period or soft phase-in. He says some people have had less than 2 weeks' notice that they will no longer get a pension at all.
As compared with the idea of the change in the assets test, for example, plenty of time. We're changing the asset test threshold from the 1st of January 2017. This is coming in a year earlier. It is far more difficult to understand. It is only going to be really understood when people get letters, as they're starting to get, like you no longer have a pension.
Financial advisor Max Lewis ending that report by Penny Timms. And that's AM for today. Briefly in finance, the Dow Jones is at 17,667 points. The Nasdaq is at 5,089. The Australian dollar is buying 72.8 US cents. I'm Kim Landers. The time is now 7:30.